welcome to the Midweek F1 podcast. We are on episode 20. Can you believe it? And first up, right, I need to give a shout out to producer Jim for writing possibly my favourite ever intro. Now, bear in mind, he has to do this every single week and come up with something creative. So what he's written here, "Hi, I'm Nicola Hume," is what it says here, because that's my name. And for our Austin Grand Prix episode, it's only right that I'm joined by the Lone Star Cowboy of F1 commentary, the rootin' tootin' legend that is Ben Edwards. Howdy, partner.
Thank you, Nicola. Thank you, Jim. Fantastic. You know, I'm not actually a cowboy, but I did grow up with horses. My mum used to breed them, but I got into tractors and that got me into motorsport.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, you should have worn a cowboy hat today.
I should have done.
Yeah, you should have done. Yeah. Right, by the way, before we go any further, make sure you subscribe. So if you're watching on YouTube, then click the subscribe button or click the bell button as well. So then you'll get notifications every time a new video goes live. And if you're listening, wherever you're listening, click the follow button, please, because we have a lot to discuss today, don't we, Ben?
Oh, we do. We do. I mean, it wasn't the greatest Grand Prix in the world, but what a weekend in the fact that we've now got three fighting for the World Championship. So Max Verstappen did a fantastic job. That sprint race, ironically, we don't normally see safety cars, and yet that had a major incident. Yeah, two safety cars in the sprint race. And the Grand Prix was quite a butt for Max. This has certainly meant that he is a challenger for the title, which you kept telling us.
Yes, and I've been saying that since day one. Since day one. And here we are on episode 20. This is my smug face. Welcome to the show. Now, it's only right, because there's so much to talk about, that we bring in our guest right from the get-go. So please welcome former Five Live pit lane reporter and current F1 Back at Base presenter, Holly Samos.
Thank you. Hello. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm very good. Yeah, and no, I'm excited. It was a good weekend. So I was excited to be invited on to this particular podcast.
It's great to have you with us, Holly. We've worked together in the past. I want to get your thoughts on all sorts of stuff regarding from this weekend and, of course, looking forward. And also our We Need to Talk About, and that's going to be about sprint races.
Yes. And then we have our Midweek F1 Prediction Championship of the World. Mm. Now, this is where we predict, we get points, we have a whole table. We're going to reveal how well we all did after the Austin Grand Prix. And spoiler alert, Oh, Ben, he's had a bad one. We'll tell you about it later.
Yeah, definitely. But we're also going to be looking into what is coming up next. So I'm going to have to predict again. Of course, Mexico is coming up next. And that's going to be fascinating. The high Mexico race, you know, it's a higher
altitude.
Altitude. And that makes life a bit difficult. So which team is going to be strong? That's what we're going to be talking about and trying to predict. I'm very good at that, of course, getting zero most weeks. We'll try and predict who's going to win.
It's so funny. Right, let's talk about Austin, because so much happened over the weekend. I mean, we were off to a kickstart with the sprint race to start off with, so it was a very jam-packed weekend of all of the things. The sprint race was wild. I mean, that turn one moment, which we're going to discuss in a minute, was crazy. And from the start, we were like, oh, maybe this means Max might be up there. Oh, wait, he's now gained 8 points. And then suddenly the qualifying comes up, he gets pole position. And then the race comes up. And can I just say, shout out Charles Leclerc, Minister of Defence. Absolutely loved it.
Yes.
Let's discuss, please. So what we're going to do, as is tradition, is producer Jim comes up with certain things for us to talk about when it comes to the Austin Grand Prix. So go for it, producer Jim.
Okay, let's start with the sprint race and the McLarens coming together. Was this just a first corner racing incident, or was Oscar's attempt at a cutback too soon and aggressive? Discuss.
It's a good one. I mean, I think I can totally understand what Oscar tried, because you could see Lando braking late. It was a good start by Oscar. It was just a question of diving back in when you're going into turn one at Austin, and there was a whole bunch of cars trying to do the same a bit further back, and that's what caused the incident. I think it was unfortunate, but I do think Oscar's experience going forward will think, maybe I shouldn't have turned in at that particular point. Mm-hmm. You know, even though I'd done the braking right, if this was the start of the race, that was a bit risky, I think.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because he's been a little bit on the back foot the last few races, and going into that first corner, and especially after Baku as well, he made a couple of mistakes there. But going into that first corner, it's like you said, Ben, he knows there are 17 people behind him, and he, but they all, the drivers kind of roughly predict where everyone's going to turn the corner, don't they? So yeah. they say, well, you know, they're going to go around the outside, he's going to cut inside, therefore I've got a space in the middle. But it was just so obvious the way that he turned in like that. So you'd like my big steering wheel.
That was nice.
Yeah, my big F1 steering lorry. Wheel, yeah. But when they, you know, to turn in like that, and then obviously Nico got a bit of the blame from Zach. It was just, it was unfortunate. But I think that the way that the car got lifted and then obviously had to be put back together again for the race, for qualifying in the race, I wonder whether that affected the rest of his weekend as well.
Yeah. I was wondering that. But I mean, we have to give... kudos to Zach, because he did apologise after for blaming Nico first and foremost, because it was one of those where when you see it instantly you go, it was his fault, but then you see the replays. Yeah. And
amateur
like,
hour, he called
that's
it, didn't
what he?
Said. I know.
Cheeky it was bugger. yeah. But he has apologised, so that's fine.
It is understandable, because Alonso had made the move up the inside of Hulkenberg, and it was fair. Well, Alonso did, but Hulk had to give him then space, and suddenly it was off kind of wider pack than I think Oscar had expected. But it's something you have to learn. It's something you have to get into. And it was unfortunate. And as you say, I wonder whether, because they didn't do any race laps in the sprint race, it cost McLaren a bit in learning how to set the cars up for the race itself. Yeah. Although Lando then did a very good job. You know, he was quick. But I do wonder if that hurt Piastri a little bit, in that they hadn't got that little bit of extra knowledge of how the car would be in a race space, or race distance, if you like, even though the sprint race is shorter than the Grand Prix.
And that 1 hour of practice, that's the whole thing about a sprint weekend, isn't it? You only get 1 hour to get it right. Mm-hmm. And it's never a full hour, is it, to get to test all those tyres. And yeah, their strategy is, yeah, it will definitely have affected them. But I think McLaren came into this weekend, and maybe we'll talk about this, in a very weird way, coming off the last race. Yeah. You know, the repercussions, the consequences. I mean, it just started badly and then kind of went downhill from there.
Producer Jim.
Ferrari have a good Grand Prix shock. Great tyre strategy and epic defensive driving from Leclerc. Yeah. And Hamilton pips Piastri despite late tyre issues. Could Ferrari nick second place in the constructors off Mercedes? Discuss.
Ooh, oh, it maybe? Is so close, though. It is so. There are now 3 points between Ferrari and Red Bull. So Ferrari
and Max.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we saw Max do so well at the weekend, and he's got the confidence. We're going to be talking about that a bit more. But the fact that Mercedes are on 3-4-1, Ferrari on 3-3-4, so they're only. So it's so close, 7 points behind. And then Red Bull are only a further 3 points further behind. Mm. So you've got 10 points between the three teams. So, Jim, I'm not sure I can confirm that Ferrari are definitely going to be second. But I do think, and as you mentioned, Charles Leclerc did a great job, didn't he?
Yes, he really did. I mean, fair play to him, because the moment that Lando overtook him twice, you just saw Lando just shoot off. So you can just see how much of a good job Charles Leclerc did from holding him back for so long. And it felt like he was doing Max a favour, just throwing that out there.
Yeah, no,
maybe just like I'd rather not McLaren. I don't want McLaren to win this, so let's just hold things back.
I think they really go to win, don't they? They don't necessarily consider other drivers and what maybe, you know, who's going to win the championship eventually. It's not going to be Charles, but I don't know whether he would think that, but I just think he was trying his damnedest to be up front, and for once the car was all right underneath him. I think the whole race was really around Lando and Charles, and the defence was amazing. He definitely was driver of the day, even though your Max won it. But what's interesting with what producer Jim was saying was that Mercedes is second in the Constructors' Championship at the moment. We know that the Constructors' Championship is so important for the teams, because that's the money. But you've got Ferrari right behind them, and then you've got Red Bull. Like you say, all of the points pretty much have been scored by Max, which is phenomenal, because he has done so well this year and he is the best driver out there. But I think Mercedes are going to be worried not just about Ferrari, they're going to be worried about Red Bull, because they could quite easily jump and get second in the championship, which would be a horror.
Yeah, it's going to be really tight in that battle for second in the Constructors' Championship. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. I do think, by the way, as Jim said, the tyre strategy that they used for Leclerc was really effective. I mean, that soft tyre at the start, and he used it so well to get in front of Lando and then to hold him off for so long That was clever. And Ferrari don't always get the strategy right, but that was good.
But that was really interesting, wasn't it? Because it was such a risk.
Yeah.
Everyone just thought, oh, Charles got soft tyres on in the top 10, literally. And even Charles said afterwards, I realised I was the only one that had soft tyres on. So I think for him, he didn't even know how long they'd last, especially with a heavy car.
I was surprised it went as far as it did, I must admit. I kept expecting him to have to come into the pits, but he just kept it going.
Yeah. Producer Jim.
Okay. Carlos Sainz goes from hero to zero, third in the sprint race, then crashes into Antonelli, trying an ambitious manoeuvre. He's been slapped with a five-place grid drop for Mexico. Does the fine fit the crime? Discuss.
It's a tricky one, this, because like I've watched the clip back a few times and you're like, oh, but actually then you watch the onboard from Kimi's perspective and you just don't see him coming at all. All of a sudden he's like, he's going to take the corner and then he's just spinning off and suddenly he's off. So I just think it had to have been Sainz, his fault, and then it makes sense that now there's a penalty. It's just one of those things. But I do think, throwing this out there, Sainz is making Albon look a bit average, because he's particularly good. He's had some bad luck this season, but I think Sainz is just making Albon look a bit meh.
I think they're a really good pairing. They're a great pairing, and Sainz has had some tricky moments this year with the team, but he's kind of coming out the other side. But I think even he knew. I mean, I don't know whether I agree with you about the averageness of Albon, because I think he's really good.
Okay.
But I don't know points-wise. I mean, I haven't got my stats in front of me or anything. But I don't know. I just think Sainz knew straight away that he'd made a mistake. He kind of held his hand up, didn't he? He's a really great driver. He's a great guy. But
yeah, that was an error, I think, because he made a great move very early on Ollie Bearman down at that turn 15, turn 16, and he got the late braking done, and fair play to Ollie, he saw, you know, that Sainz was alongside, he couldn't turn in. But when he tried it on Antonelli, he just was not close enough, by no means close enough. It was perfectly fair for Antonelli to just turn in, and that's when the contact was made. It was a shame, and I do feel Carlos, he'd almost given himself too much confidence by doing it earlier and thinking, oh, I could do this again. But I've seen that at that corner before, you know. It's a bit of a risky place. You can overtake there, but it is risky. You've got to kind of know how your rival tends to go. Mm. And sometimes you need to be behind them a bit longer just to see where they're braking. And I think Carlos just went for it a bit too soon.
Mm. And sometimes with the punishments, you kind of think it's a little bit unfair, because Kimi Antonelli got whacked back and
indeed,
he didn't get any points. Yeah. You know, so even though Carlos is getting, he's got a five place in Mexico at the weekend, but it is a little bit, I don't know. I don't know how you could make that any fairer in F1, but...
No idea.
It's always tricky with the rules.
Yeah, they tend to just make things up as they go along. The Producer Jim.
Okay, more points for Bearman, despite a very scary moment with Tsunoda. Do we think Yuki moved too much under braking, or was it a racing incident? Discuss.
It's funny, because this is the first part of that two-corner, the 15-16 element. And Ollie Bearman, you know, you could see he definitely had great pace and he was really putting Tsunoda under pressure. I was disappointed, actually, that Tsunoda made the move. He doesn't get a penalty. He didn't actually do anything illegal in terms of getting a penalty. Mm. Absolutely right. But I just feel he knew the car was there, and quite why he cut the line quite so quickly, and that took Ollie off. Thankfully, he did come back and still score points, which was very, very crucial. But yeah, I was a bit disappointed. But I think Tsunoda is somebody you've really got to be a bit cautious when you're racing against him.
He seemed to be driving angry this week.
Yeah.
Yuki.
Yeah. I think there's a lot going on in their mind. There's not Max, but with the other, with Tsunoda, and then the two Racing Bulls drivers, you know, they're all aiming for the same seat, aren't they? And I think that stays with you. You know, we always talk about F1 drivers being these phenomenal sportsmen, which they are. They're unbelievable athletes. But they're human as well, and they don't know. I mean, half the time, even if you've got a contract, it doesn't mean anything, does it, in F1 sometimes? So it's a tricky one. But I think he's got beef with both Racing Bull drivers.
Yes.
And there's, it's just, he's not comfortable. He's not comfortable in the car. And I think it's such a sport of fine margins, isn't it? Detail counts for everything. Mm. Those milliseconds. I mean, George Russell talked about how in qualifying, he ended up P4, didn't he? But he could have been P2 if he was 6,000ths quicker. I mean, it's milliseconds.
Yeah.
And I think if you've got something like that in your head, you're not comfortable in the team, you don't know whether you've, after Mexico, am I going to have a seat or not? Am I going to be in F1 or not? It plays on your mind.
Yeah. Yuki does remind me of that character from Inside Out. He's the angry one that would just suddenly be like, flames come out of his head. And then he'll just react with everything with anger. And
well, I think he was when he weekend. First came in to the sport, wasn't he? He was just super angry down. And then they calmed him down.
But now it's all just picked back
up coming
again.
Back out again.
I really agree with both of you. And how some of these drivers are under pressure do things. It's a bit like Franco Colapinto passing his teammate, Pierre Gasly, even though the team, Alpine, had told him, don't pass him. Colapinto did pass him.
Because he was like, yeah, but he's going so slow. Yeah.
And I've seen that the team have actually said that they are going to talk to him about it because they were not happy that he had actually overtaken. But you can kind of understand it because he feels under pressure. Can he keep his world of Formula One going? But on the other hand, you've got to be cautious because if you upset a team, you might lose your place. But this is, you know, it's a bit similar for Yuki Tsunoda, for some of the others, all battling to stay in Formula One.
Mm. It's brutal business, this, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it is. It's like it's the pinnacle of motorsport.
Almost like that. Yes.
Funny that, isn't it?
Producer Jim.
Okay, Driver Championship Focus 1. Another low-scoring weekend for Oscar. That's no podium in 3 Grand Prix. And his championship lead is cut to 14 points. Is this still a blip or something more? Discuss.
I don't know what's happening. Because it seemed like, you know, we started the season going, oh, well, clearly this is McLaren's year. And then for the first sort of, I would say, like 8 races, it felt like everyone was going, oh, it's Oscar. It's Oscar. It's Oscar's for the win. He's clearly the world champion. Lovely, lovely, lovely. He then stormed ahead, did really well. There was a few hiccups along the way and a few moments where they had to change places and all this drama. But it just felt like it was Oscar's championship to win. And then the last few races, I don't know what's going on. Like, what's going on in his head? Has he lost his head?
I don't know. I mean, it could be something to do with the car. You know, we talked about this off air, didn't we? It's like sometimes, you know, that with the upgrades that they've bought, slightly changing the front of the car, this front suspension that has helped Lando maybe a bit more. I think this car is fundamentally still super fast. Mm. I think where they qualified for the Austin race, if Lando had got past Charles, I think he could have challenged Max at the front.
Yes.
He has got a super fast car underneath him. And the thing is, there is a huge amount of pressure. There are 5 races left, 5 Grand Prix left. There are 2 sprint races left. There's a huge amount of points, 141 points on the table. But I don't know. I think the pressure of performing to your utmost and You know you've got a fast car underneath you. They haven't got the advantage that they had earlier on in the season. Max is just being phenomenal. His car is phenomenal. They get the setup right. When there's a sprint weekend, they don't have the time. They only have that 1 hour practice session straight into the sprint. And if it could have been the setup why Oscar didn't have a fast car underneath him this weekend, because the car is fast. It just wasn't this weekend.
Absolutely, yeah. And obviously he must have been disappointed to lose that bit out in qualifying to Lando. It wasn't Oscar shining as we have seen him shine, I don't think. I mean, yes, he did manage to keep George Russell behind him throughout the race. He never, you know, made a mistake in that sense, but he just never quite had the pace that we saw Lando had over the weekend. And I do wonder, as you say, whether the development of the car has kind of suited Lando a bit better, because he was a bit upset with the car earlier on this year. But he was quick. He couldn't get past Charles for a long time. But once he had, Max was actually quite anxious because he was going quicker than Max. But Max just managed to hold him off, you know, with a good gap, because by then it was too late really for Lando to do anything. But yeah, Oscar, I'm intrigued with. I'm really intrigued. I think he's been so strong so many times, but he's been through a couple of poorer patches. Can he get it back together? I think he's got it within him.
Yes.
I really do, but we're going to have to wait and see.
I now can't call it. You know, we went through the phase where we do our prediction championship of the world, where naturally I would always go for Max P1. But I did go through a phase there in the middle where I was like, well, it's probably going to be Oscar. So I'm going to have to go Max P2 because it's probably going to be Oscar and I need some points. Mm. But now you're just like, now I don't know what's happening. Now I can't. he's not the first guy that's popping into my head. Now I am just naturally going Max P1, which is so weird.
Do you know, I think Oscar also, watching him this year, it's his third year in Formula One, and he developed a huge amount after last year, coming into 2025. He's got a little bit of Max about him, I think. You know when Max does those kind of incredible moves or sometimes makes incredible mistakes?
Yes.
And I saw that in Oscar this year, and I just thought, it's interesting because it's like he hasn't quite found himself yet fully. Yeah. You know, maybe next year he will be, I mean, he'll be more experienced, and so he'll be maybe an even better racing driver than he is this year. But I'm still kind of, I know we're going to talk about this, but I think I'm still backing his teammate.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We'll discuss more later. Producer Jim.
How apt. Driver Championship Focus 2. Despite the sprint trouble, Norris battles well to finish second in the Grand Prix. He is now the form driver at McLaren. How do McLaren manage their drivers going into this weekend?
Oh, okay, well, let's discuss.
Discuss.
I think it's not just this weekend, is it? At what point do the team actually consider backing one of their drivers? I mean, that's the question that I came out of this weekend. I was like, you know, they're going to just take points off each other and their little Max is going to come through from behind.
Who do you back?
Exactly.
Who do you back?
Exactly. Who do you back? Because they've won the Constructors' Championship. It's really down to the two drivers. But as you say, in a way, if Lando and Oscar could work together, they might be able to prevent Max being the challenger.
They can't work together. That's not going
to
happen.
Exactly.
They're
battling for championships. So it's a complicated situation.
Yeah. Because you'd think, you know, a few weeks ago, it would be, right, we'll immediately back Oscar. But now you're like, oh, no, maybe you should back Lando. But how's that fair? Because Oscar's still technically in the lead when it comes to championship. But it seems like Lando's now the stronger driver of the two.
But is Oscar really... I know he's technically in the lead, but is it because of that DNF that Lando had? Do you think they would have been pretty much similar at the top of the standings if Lando hadn't had the DNF? And then that's when all the internal problems began with Monza and everything, didn't it, within the team?
Yes.
But... yeah, I know. I think it's a really, what was it, 2007?
Seven.
Yes.
Yes.
And you see Kimi Raikkonen coming up from behind.
Absolutely.
We've brought up
2007 a few times
point.
On this podcast because we're just like, maybe this is another year.
And McLaren desperately trying to do the right thing. You know, they're such a process strategic team, aren't they, that everything is in its right box and everything is I mean, they just are, aren't they? They're a very different team, the way that they operate compared to, say, Red Bull or Mercedes or some of the other teams. But I find it really, really interesting because I just think you have five races left. There are 141 points to go. That's a huge amount of points. A huge amount of things can happen. We've got some amazing tracks coming up where we've had really interesting racing in the past. Mm-hmm. At what point do we actually have the discussion, at least, you know, do we back a driver?
Well, here's the thing. So I've got a WhatsApp group where we play F1 fantasy together, and we were talking about it yesterday and saying, do you think that because Oscar didn't seem to be doing so well, do you think that now that they've won the Constructors, McLaren are now just focusing on 2026 and just letting their drivers do whatever they've got to do, and it's just not quite working out for them, rather than still focusing on their cars and helping them improve?
Well, it's all about setup now, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's no developments coming anymore. So it's all, everything's, obviously, if you win the Constructors like they did last year, they have less wind tunnel time compared to other teams. But everything is on 26. Mm. Everything is on 26. Even the boys are in the sims on the 26 car. It's not about this year's car. So it is what we've got left and how do we get the setup right. And I think maybe they didn't quite get the setup right this weekend because of the sprint and because of everything that happened in Austin. But I think ultimately they have got a super fast car at all tracks, as does Max and the Red Bull. Mercedes come and go. You know, George won in Singapore.
That's right, yeah.
They do all right in Mercedes, so they could interrupt. Ferrari were nowhere, and then suddenly they're, you know, on the podium. I mean, it's going to be really, really fascinating. But I think for those three drivers to win the Drivers' Championship, two of them have never won this before, and it could be their only chance. It really could. The reg change next year is going to be phenomenal. It's the biggest rules change in history in Formula One. the pressure they are putting on themselves, the pressure the team have got, but the team, the one thing McLaren do not want is Max to win.
Yeah, you know? Obviously, yeah.
But at what point, I think, do you have the conversation? We need to back one of our drivers. Or do they, it's all about the racing. It's just about the racing. Let them race. Of course, let them race. That's what we've all been saying as fans for the whole season. But then they did that thing in Monza when it was the slow pit stop for Lando. And then they swapped the thing. And they should never have done the thing, Nicola.
No, they shouldn't have done. They've done the thing and they've just made a rod for their own back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Producer Jim.
Drivers' Championship Focus 3. Max Verstappen is coming to get you. A massive 23-point swing with sprint and Grand Prix victories. Since the Dutch Grand Prix, he has outscored the McLaren pair in every race. If that continues, he will be world champion. Can he do it?
Yes.
Discuss.
Yes. The end. So basically, after the Dutch Grand Prix, he was 104 points behind Oscar. So literally over the last few races, he has gained 64 points.
It's fantastic
it's
what he's done.
It's now 40 points. And there's 141 points to gain. Yeah. This is what you were just saying. And it's totally possible now.
Yeah. And the confidence he's got too. Because yes. Up to now, he's been saying to media, oh, well, no, I can't. You know, I'm still not in the battle. But now he actually really feels he is. He was saying that after winning that race in Austin, he is in the battle. And I think there's a real chance, you know, going, we'll be talking about Mexico shortly because that's a circuit that's always gone well for Max in the past.
Yes.
So there is so much to look forward to for all of us. And whether he's going to be able to do it, it is now really possible that he could be world champion. Even though Red Bull got a penalty, by the way. Did you see that? Red Bull got a penalty. One of their crew who went through a gate out towards the grid to try and tear off a little label that was showing Lando Norris where to stop the car on the grid. So Red Bull got a penalty for that. But
disgraceful.
I don't know who that team was. But that I do find that quite funny, though.
That did not affect Max. And Max still had a dominant weekend winning both races.
Yeah. Your thoughts on Mr. Max Verstappen, please?
He's phenomenal. Yeah. He is the best driver in the sport at the moment. And he's so fast. And the car is so good underneath him. And they've got it right. The team have turned it around, considering all of the craziness that has happened within Red Bull over the last year and a half, 2 years. So many people have left, not just Christian Horner, but so many people have left, from Adrian Newey, Rob Marshall, who's gone to McLaren, who's brilliant. You know,
Will
all
Courtney
these
in strategy.
Yes,
yeah,
incredible people. And yet they still produce a really fast car. I think, yes, absolutely, he could win it. But he is third in the championship at the moment. And it is the guy second that I think I am backing for the win. Okay. I think he is going to be the one that shines through. And it's interesting because Red Bull are only focusing on Max, aren't they? So that is a positive for them. Whereas McLaren have got the two drivers they're trying to manage and trying to be completely fair between them. And that's really, really tricky to do.
Yes.
Plus, Max has won championships before and these two haven't. So I love it. It's brilliant. It's really great, isn't it?
Yeah, we're very lucky, I think, the way this season's going.
Yeah, it's been an amazing season. And you just know that the next five races and two sprints are just going to be an absolute joy to watch. And we all need some popcorn for it.
Yeah.
And it's making social media has come to life because of it. So I want to do the social media roundup because what's been going on is all of the memes being made of Max sneaking up behind the McLarens. So one of them I saw was like a horror film, and it was Lando and Oscar like hiding in a corner, and then like it's suddenly a shot of Max down a corridor like creeping up.
Yeah.
But my favourite was the commentators on Sky F1 that were bringing up the fact that it was a bit like Jurassic Park. And Lando and Oscar are in the Jeep and Max is the T-Rex creeping up on them. That's basically what. So people are making all the memes of Max slowly catching up to them, and it's just so juicy on
and
socials.
Momentum, it counts, doesn't it, in F1? When you've got that momentum behind you, it really does give you that. It's like we were talking earlier about fine margins and that detail in the sport. And I think now that he's got the momentum and this, I mean, they're kind of standing taller, aren't they?
Yeah.
And he, for once, because usually he's very good at just saying, well, yeah, but I'm a million points behind. It doesn't mean I'm going to... In his head, obviously, that's all he wants to do is win. Whereas this weekend, he was like, yeah, no, I could. Yeah. I could win this now.
Yeah. I think what I'm enjoying as well as a Max fan is I'm seeing other people become Max fans.
There was quite no booing.
All of the Lewis fans are becoming Max fans, which is something I never thought I would see. But everyone that's rooting for Lewis is now rooting for Max. They're rooting for the underdog that is
One
Max.
One will never forget 2021.
Yes.
And we will have to have a discussion about that at some point.
That's fine.
Or away from here, maybe, Nicola. But, but no, it's, yeah, he's, and maybe it's because he became a dad. You know, he's chilled a little bit. He's not as mean as he was when sometimes he was a little bit sharp or brutal with people, wasn't he? But he's just a phenomenal driver. Yes. And I think everyone in F1, even when Lando talks about him, you could see the adoration, can't you, in the way that they all talk about the way that he drives, so...
Yeah. By the way, on social media, if you search for Midweek F1, follow us on all of the things. Instagram, TikTok, all of the things. And let us know your thoughts on the season so far, please, because it's been a wild one.
Holly, it's really great to have you with us for the podcast this time. Now, you've been involved in reporting on Formula One for many years, presenting as well. How did you first get into Formula One? How did it all begin for you?
Gosh. So... thank you. So about a million years ago, I was doing a radio show with Chris Evans in the UK, and it was a breakfast show. It was a really fun, crazy show, crazy ride. And while we were doing that show, I lived with a girl called Fiona, and she was a huge F1 fan, and so was I. So every Sunday we would watch the F1, and then I'd go on air the next morning, and it was one of those shows where you kind of just... You know, someone says, hey, what did you get up to last night? And I always talk about Formula One, and some of the guys on the show were very interested as well. So it became a thing that we always mentioned what was happening in the F1, and that was during the 90s. And then I started going to some races with Eddie Jordan and B&H, who was their sponsor at the time. And so that was really fun. And then Five Live, BBC Radio Five Live, approached me one day and just said, would you be interested in being a pit lane reporter? And I was kind of like, oh, let me think about that for all of half a second. Yes, okay, I'd love to.
I was done now, thank you very much.
And it was brilliant because it was like going on, because I'd always worked in music, it was like going on the road with a band. You know, you get to know all the roadies and all the, you know, the managers, and it's the same in F1. You get to know the teams, and because I was a pit lane reporter as well, I really got inside the teams. Yeah. So it wasn't just the drivers that I was interviewing. It was a lot of the team members and team principals as well. And they're a fascinating bunch, aren't they? Yes. I mean, you really get pulled in.
Yeah.
And it's just that one of those sports where the more you learn, the more you like it. And you never stop learning. And it's fascinating. And there are two drivers and then there's 1,500 people plus behind them working towards getting this performance on the car. I mean, it's just brilliant. So it was all kind of, I fell into it basically, Ben.
Love that. Fantastic. What a nice way to fall.
Fantastic. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not a bad fall, is it?
Not a bad fall. No, I love it. I love it. And I did pit lane reporting for about 5 or 6 years and then had children and, you know, obviously different things happen in your life. And so, but I carried on sort of working in it and then, and then came up with my own podcast with one of my colleagues that I worked at the BBC with, Sarah Holt. And so we just came up with an idea and thought, let's create something that the fans don't get access to. Because Formula One really changed when Bernie Ecclestone left and when Liberty came in and the access opened up. But still, there's not that many of us that work within and have all those contacts and the trust between us as, I mean, I wouldn't call myself a journalist, but, you know, a reporter, I suppose, you know, a presenter, and the trust between the teams and us. And so, yeah, we came up with an idea and it's called F1 Back at Base and we're on third series now, which is really
very
great.
Nice.
Thank you. Success. I even won awards.
Really?
Yes.
Very nice.
Thanks.
Did you celebrate with champagne?
I did.
Did you throw it around like you were on a podium?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes. No, it's been great.
What's your thoughts on the 2025 season so far?
I think it's been really great.
Yeah.
It's been really great. The thing is, in F1, and when you work in it as well, you're always looking ahead. So even though it's got this incredible history, you're always kind of thinking of... So I'm always like looking at, 2026 is going to be really interesting because there's this huge reg change. But at the same time, the racing in 2025 has been great. The whenever you come to the end of a sort of regulation change, the racing kind of gets better. It gets a bit closer. And then you think, oh, no, why are you changing it this year?
Yes.
Because, you know, the next year there could have been four teams going for the title, you know. But it's going to be really, really great next year. And I think, and F1 as a whole is just, I mean, it's just catapulting into the stratosphere, isn't it, at the moment? So really cool.
It's great you mentioned your podcast and how well it's going. I'm really pleased for you.
Thank
Have you.
You
got any little interesting inside stories from doing that this year that,
give us
that you can tell us?
Well, we're recording series three at the moment. So we generally record across the year or the second half of the year, and then we put it out as a box set before the season begins. So after Christmas and before Australia.
That's a nice way of doing it, by the way.
Yes.
Because you can just binge it when you're craving it.
Yeah. And also that it is a time of year when the racing stopped and you're kind of like, it's not March yet,
yeah.
you know, and
yeah.
and now the first test is a closed test. We don't even know what's going to happen yeah. with the test, you know, so for all the super, super duper fans. But no, it's good. We go right behind the scenes. The lovely thing about audio and about podcasts is that, so for series one, we went behind the scenes into wind tunnels. You know, you're never allowed into wind tunnels. I'd never been into a wind tunnel before, and I've been working in the sport for 15, 20 years. And you know, we're talking to people that work within those spaces and really trying to understand the behind the scenes, you know, the people back at base, behind the drivers. And then the first series, Lewis Hamilton decided he was going to drop Mercedes and go to Ferrari. And that was a real bombshell that happened in real time. And we were there. So it was great for us.
Nice.
But at the same time, it was like, right, throw that episode out the window.
Yeah.
We've got to try and get him, you know. So it's you're kind of recording and editing in real time. But it's really fab. And then the second series, we were with McLaren the last 10 races and we were following their racing. And I remember saying to the BBC, I mean, obviously, I know they're going to win the championship. Obviously, I didn't know that at all. And that was just pure luck, you know. So it's good. There is, yeah, we've got some good stuff coming up for the third series, but I just can't talk about it yet.
Okay, well, we'll find out more. Okay, right, it's time for us to do our We Need to Talk About. And it's partly set up because of what happened in Austin at the weekend, at the sprint race, which was a bit surprising, of course, seeing both McLarens out at the end of the first lap, you know, because they crashed into each other at turn one. But sprint races are a bit of an aspect in Formula One now. And I just wanted to get your thoughts, both of you, your thoughts on sprint races, because they're very much going forward. Next year, they're still going to have six, but they're talking about, for the following year, maybe going to 10 sprint races in Formula One. And part of that is because they are finding that more people tend to tune in because of the sprint race. It's a higher percentage of people tuning in for sprint race. But what are your thoughts on it all?
I can see what they're doing for the viewership and for the numbers and all that kind of thing. But at the same time, the drivers must be knackered. I mean, they're doing 24 races anyway, which is the most amount of races ever on an F1 calendar. Like, they're just throwing out race after race after race. Then they go, let's do some mini races. That'll be fun. Let's do more of those. And it just seems to be more and more and more. And it's maybe a bit too intense for the drivers, I think, of a weekend, and they don't get much practice. So data-wise, it makes things a bit more tricky for the teams. As a viewer, makes it very exciting, especially now that we are coming to the end of a potentially very exciting season. So actually, those sprint races really matter.
Mm.
But then sometimes when it's one of those seasons like 2 years ago, where you're just like, I just don't see the point of this sprint race whatsoever.
Because you've got a dominant force at that time.
So I think it depends on the season, but I can see why they're doing it, because it means we all want to watch it, and we do want to watch it. But at the same time, I'm just, if they're going to then throw out 10 sprint races and 24 Grand Prix, is that too much for the drivers? I don't know.
Holly, what do you think?
I enjoy them, actually, because, I mean, and I, you know, it's different when you've worked within F1, the practice sessions mean so much, because, and especially if you're a pit lane reporter, because that's what you're talking to everyone about and interviewing them about, is all the data they're collecting. But I don't know whether that's good for the fans. You know, it's not that exciting going to a practice session or watching a practice session. It's lovely seeing the cars, but you've got no idea what is going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And unless they share that, which the teams won't do because that's their IP and their privacy, you know, their performance, I think it's really tricky for the audience. And so when there's a sprint, I think it's track dependent though, isn't it? And also there's that thing of you really don't want to crash because that will affect qualifying 3 hours later, which will then affect the race, which we saw this weekend potentially with Piastri and his setup. So personally, I know it's very divided within the sport. There is a 50-50 sort of love-hate relationship with it, but I like it. I would much rather watch a race, even if it's a few laps.
Yeah.
And to be honest, my son is a 16-year-old, and he said to me yesterday, I really enjoy qualifying because they're really going for it. There's no tire saving. There's no strategy. They're just foot to the floor qualifying. And you kind of go, maybe we need like a qualifying race. Is that what they're trying to do? Sprint? You know, do you know what I mean?
It's like,
because that is the one bit annoying bit I find is with the tire strategies and wind direction and how it affects the cars in a race. And you just think, we don't know that he's tire saving. We just think he's a bit slow at the moment, but actually he's saving his tires so that he can get to that pit stop window so that he can, you know. And I think sometimes
But I think the unpredictability of that is actually a good thing, because I do think tires are still a little bit unpredictable for all the teams. They all have the same from Pirelli, of course, but I actually quite enjoy that to a certain extent, that some teams are working the tires better than others. That is part of it. Mm. But it's interesting what you're saying about the sprint, because I'm a little bit concerned about next year. Three new sprint events are going to be Montreal, Zandvoort, and Singapore.
Yeah.
They are not easy tracks on which to overtake. And I do wonder whether the sprint races may just be purely as they qualify. I mean, yes, there are dramas sometimes, like in Austin, but then Austin is a track where you can overtake, and especially turn one. But yeah, I'm a little bit, I understand why they're doing Zandvoort, for example, because Zandvoort will be dropped from Formula One calendar. But Singapore as well, a sprint race at Singapore, that I do find that a bit of an odd idea. When we see so little overtaking on the Grand Prix at Singapore, it's really down to tire wear. Singapore it is defined by tire wear, but that won't be an aspect in the sprint race.
Do you think it's F1 after the sort of drive to survive situation that we found ourselves in over the last sort of 5 years, that this is Formula One trying to bring in the younger fans and going, here's your short form content. I know that your attention span isn't long enough to last an entire Grand Prix.
Yep.
Here's your short form version. Yeah. Watch the sprint, enjoy it. It's just people going really fast for 19 laps done.
Yeah, and I do understand that. And it is definitely, they have proved that there are more people watching, you know, rather than watching the practice sessions and whatever. So I do totally understand it. But I know what you mean, because if you've been involved in Formula One for many years, it still feels a little odd.
Yeah.
But I totally understand why they are looking into this a bit more, if more people are watching.
Mm. Yeah.
All good fun. We've got to start thinking ahead now already, actually, because we've got to start looking at Mexico and what might happen in Mexico, which is a challenging place. There's no doubt about it. There's a bit less drag there because it's so high. And that means that overtaking Mexico is challenging. Mind you, Max, he's won 5 of the last 7 in Mexico.
Yeah,
he's only had pole position once. It's bizarre because, you know, you think, well, surely he was always qualifying a pole, but I was looking back at it and no, he's had pole, but not often, and yet he's had 5 out of 7 wins. So I know who you're going to predict, but we're not quite there yet, but we are beginning to think about prediction, aren't we?
Yes, we are. I mean, you look ahead to Mexico, you look ahead over the next couple of races that's coming up. Well, you know, you've got Mexico and then Brazil. They're very Max strong circuits. So that's why I think the next few races are going to be particularly exciting. Your thoughts on Mexico?
Well, he was hot-headed last year, wasn't he, Max?
Yeah.
And
a little bit, yeah.
A little bit.
Just
a tad.
Yeah, a little bit.
So, it was the Ferrari of Sainz that won, wasn't it? So I think it's a definite Red Bull circuit. I think McLaren are going to do well there. You just don't know, do you, at the end of the day?
No.
But if I had to say who's going to win next
weekend.
No, next weekend. Or okay, I won't.
Well, hold on, because we're going to do our prediction championship.
Oh, I see. Right.
So this is how it works. You need to predict P1, P2, P3 and fastest lap. And it's 6 points, 4 points, 2 points and a point for fastest lap. Now, before we do our predictions, I need to do some shout outs because I was sent some screen grabs of what come in on social media. And I mean, fair play, because you've got people like at AstroGG2GM who said, this is for the Austin Grand Prix they were trying to predict. So in saying, I want P1 Lando, P2 Russell, P3 Max, fastest lap to Max. Oscar will have another DNF. Then you had Fuel to the Max on Instagram who went P1 Max, Max P1, flame, flame, flame. But I have to give the shout out to... Kit Kot Chunky, not Kit Kat Chunky, Kit Kot Chunky,
right.
Who says, fingers crossed that the McLarens take each other out.
Oh.
Ask wow. And you shall receive, my friend. Right, let's go predictions for Mexico then. Go for it. Oh, no, let me give the table so far before that happens.
Oh, yes.
No, don't do that.
I think
have
it's
you
only
not
right
been doing well?
No.
Ben's journey has been interesting.
Has it been a roller coaster?
He started off way at the bottom, but then he did. You did had a good sort of two weeks where you were at the top of the table.
I came back up. But
he's had another week where
good
he
good European
scored.
Season. And
yeah,
then,
yeah. He's dropped away a bit now.
Yeah, he scored nothing for this week. Oh, so he's back in last place with 55 points. P3 is team guest with 65 points because you've got... the Max win and then Charles Leclerc for P3. And then I am in second place with 66 because I predicted Max to win because I always do. And then producer Jim with his hands in the air over there, 10 points. Yeah, because the Max Bosh. Win and Lando second, smashing it in the lead with 74 points. Wow. Producer Jim.
He must have been so relieved when Lando finally got past Charles Leclerc. He must have been watching that race thinking, come on.
Point swing.
I need those points. I need those points. Right. So we need P1, P2, P3.
So
and
for team guest. Okay. So, well, yeah. Okay. So I think P1 is going to be Lando Norris.
Okay.
Gasp from the corner. I think P2 will be Max Verstappen and P3 will be Oscar Piastri.
A little sandwich.
Fastest lap?
Mm-hmm.
Not one of those three. I'm going to go for Kimi Antonelli again. He did it this weekend, didn't
he? Yeah,
he
did.
Yeah, fair play.
Mm. Ooh, me next. Oh, well, okay. I'm
just
gonna
do the opposite of what Ben says.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go for Max actually winning this
Damn
one. Because he's had such good heritage in Mexico. We'll have to see. The Ferrari sometimes works there. Like last year, as you mentioned, Carlos Sainz won. So I'm going to put Charles Leclerc in second place. I don't know what's going to happen to McLaren. Maybe there could be incidents again. I am going to put Oscar Piastri in third.
Ooh.
I'm going to give Norris fastest lap, but who knows? Who knows what's going to happen?
So you're going to put Oscar on the podium there then?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, interesting, but not Lando.
No, even though actually Piastri has struggled there so far. He's not delivered anything in Mexico, whereas Lando has done a pretty good job. So it's going to be interesting. I just want to sort of see how they go.
Yeah, see, I do feel like Lando will be the stronger of the McLarens this weekend, but I am going Max P1 because obviously that's the right thing to do. Because it's not because I have a contract with Red Bull.
Yes, it is.
And then I'm going to go P2. Curveball, George Russell.
What?
I just nice.
I know. We haven't discussed him at all in this podcast because everyone forgets that he exists. We discussed this last week. Everyone forgets about George.
Even though he had that win so recently.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. So I reckon he's just going to randomly be up there because that's what he does.
He was just a bit unlucky too. I did feel, you know, he qualified fourth. If he'd had a good run into that first, he could have had a podium again.
Yeah.
He got podium in the sprint race.
Yes.
Yeah, he would have. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because it was just milliseconds, wasn't it?
But again, we all forgot about him, didn't we?
Yeah.
We all forgot about George. Well, he will be P2.
Good to list him. Okay, and
so
who's
P2,
third?
Yeah.
P3 will be Lando. Okay. So Lando's getting on the podium. Oscar won't get on the podium, I don't think. And I don't know why.
And no Ferraris.
No Ferraris. Well, no, maybe I could do a little fastest lap, couldn't I?
Who's going to get fastest lap?
Max.
Max.
Go
Max. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Sorry, Ferrari, but I'm just stating the facts. Producer Jim?
I'm going to go for Max first because I just think he's on such a run. I think Oscar will be second because he needs a good weekend.
You literally said this last week, though.
I know, and did quite well.
You did.
And I think Norris will be third with Russell fastest lap.
I think that's a good prediction, actually. Yeah, that's a good one.
That could be a shout. That could be a shout. Well, there we go. Let us know your predictions, by the way. If you're watching on YouTube, then please subscribe. Put it in the comments section below. Wherever you're watching on social media, if you're just listening, then drop us a message and let us know what you think Mexico will be like. And if you get it right, we'll give you a shout out. Just search Midweek F1 and you're good to go. Right. So as is tradition on this podcast, we like to finish with a random fact or interesting story from our guest. So over to you.
Oh, I've got quite a few, Nicola.
I mean, we can sit here all day, so go for it.
Do you know what? At the last race, you had sitting in this guest chair, Richard Porter.
Yes.
So Rich Porter, he actually even called himself an idiot journalist during the conversation with you, which made me chuckle, because he does make me chuckle quite a lot. But he said he had a yacht story.
Yeah.
And his yacht story was to do with Alonso and Trulli, and he said it was 2006. And I, sitting at home, thought, no, you're wrong, it's not, because Trulli wasn't his teammate in 2006. Alonso's teammate was Giancarlo Fisichella. And I know that because I was on a yacht in Monaco in 2006.
Oh, I hope Rich is listening.
Sorry, Richard. So back in 2006, when it was qualifying and it was Schumacher versus Alonso for the Monaco qualifying P1, Michael Schumacher, as we know, or many people might not know, but there was quite a controversial incident where Michael had set his time and then Alonso was coming up to set his time at the very end of the qualifying session, and he was purple going quicker. And then Michael, who was in front, sort of parked his car quite conveniently at Ras Kass so that Alonso couldn't finish his lap. He didn't. The car didn't touch the side, so it was a little bit suspect. From we were all on air. Anthony Davidson at the time, who I was working with, immediately, like a racing driver does, just said, he did that on purpose, literally out loud. So I'm down in the pit lane and just thought, wow, this is really quite something, you know. So what's going to happen? There was a lot of controversy. So that evening, all the sort of investigations went on, and my commentator at the time, David Croft, went into the paddock, and he was at the bottom of the Ferrari motorhome waiting for, and this was going on into the evening, these discussions of whether Michael actually did something wrong or not, and, you know, whether he was going to get disqualified or not, or what was going to happen indeed. So I, being the consummate professional I was, had gone back to the hotel, got changed because it was Monaco and it was time to go out partying. And then suddenly all this was going on and I just thought, actually, I need to go back into the paddock, and I'm a pit lane reporter, so I need to actually find out what's going on through Ferrari and Renault. And I got to the paddock and I realised I'd forgotten my pass.
Oh, dear.
So you cannot get in.
No.
You know what it's like.
Yeah.
You cannot, if you don't have a pass, you cannot get in. So I phoned my team and said, really sorry, I forgot my pass. The hotel's miles away because we're in Monaco. So Crofty was at the base of Ferrari and he was like, don't worry, I'll stay at Ferrari. My producer was somewhere else doing something brilliant. And I was with a friend of mine and Kevin Garside, who was working for the Daily Telegraph at the time, a journalist friend. And the three of us were standing outside the paddock and thought, well, should we just go to a party?
So, yes.
Why not?
Yes.
That's exactly what I thought. So I was like, well, there's nothing else I can do standing here. And this is going on into the night. So the three of us, the thing about Monaco and parties is you don't necessarily know whose boat you're getting on. So you just get invited.
You
so
just get if, on and hope for the best.
Or you know someone who knows someone who knows someone who knows someone.
Right.
And that's how you get onto their boat. So we went to this yacht party. I had no idea whose boat it was. But Bernie Eccleston's right-hand man was also at that party.
Okay.
And I knew him, as did Kevin and my friend. So we went and we were having a glass of champagne, as you do, Nicola.
No, it's very classy. I like
yes. it. And we were just chatting and said, God, that was quite controversial today, wasn't it? And this particular man said, yeah, Michael's right at the back of the grid.
Ooh.
Hasn't
Ooh.
Been announced yet.
Ooh.
At which point I went to the loo, got my phone,
yes.
and was the first to know, to let my team know that actually Michael was being demoted to the back of the grid.
The best admin is done from the toilets. Always.
Oh, well
I mean,
done.
Honestly,
well
you know, talk about being in the right place at the
Nailed
right time.
It.
You can never predict it. Oh. Well
my, and that was my first year in F1, so the BBC just thought I was the bee's knees.
Yeah, they're just like, you've been invited to another party, go to all the parties. All the parties,
pure
yes.
fluke, yeah.
I love that. Brilliant.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you so much. It's been great to have you with us, Holly. Really, really good. And it's been great to have you with us too. And please join us again next week. We'll be talking all about what happened in Mexico.
Yep.
And we'll also be looking forward, of course, to the one after that, which is the Brazilian Grand Prix. That's one of my favourites too. So.
Yes, that is again, another big Mac circuit.
It is.
Oh, God, I'm just so...
Especially when it rains.
Oh, God, it's just going to be so good. The last five races, last two sprints, it's just going to be so dramatic. I just love it so much. It's brilliant. Subscribe, because if you want to be here for this my emotional journey, then feel free to join us. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Cheerio.
Bye-bye.